There was a popular song, and I'm not going to sing it because I can't do it. I mean, I'll get up here and I'll sing some songs, but there was a song by a guy named Edwin, what's his last name? I had it. Anyway, it's a little song. It said, "War, what is it good for?" You guys remember that song? And it was kind of the cry of the 60s, Vietnam, all that. It was just this anthem, right? And if you watch any movie that's kind of like based in the 70s or a scene from the 70s, you know, in Vietnam stuff, you know, lots of times that's a song that they'll play. And it was a song that was just asking the question, what are we doing, right? I think that's a good question to ask. I'm not saying that like all war is not necessary, but that's a good question to ask. We as citizens, we need to ask, like, is this war just? Are we doing what we're supposed to be doing? And we can debate about that all day long. But and there are some wars that are absolutely we should have stepped in. And we'll get to that. But as we have mentioned throughout the series, James is addressing the early Jewish church. The ones that have come out of the Jewish hierarchy, where there was much favoritism, where there was a class system, very much favoring those that are rich and those that had power. The law, which was supposed to help connect you with God, had become perverse to where it was a way for the rich and the powerful to get even more rich and powerful. And the commoner, the poor, they were subjected to an impossible system where it was almost impossible for them to have a relationship with God. That, of course, is why Jesus came. He came to set things right, to level the playing field, to remind us that we are all equals because we are all God's favorite creation, every one of us. He came to tear the whole thing down and restore what it was intended to be. That's why he came. 600 and some laws to follow? No, Jesus said, hey, I'm going to boil this down to 2. Love God, love your neighbor. Let's focus on what made Noah and Moses and Adam and Eve so special, and that was that they had a relationship with God. They walked and they talked with Him. They loved each other. Obviously, they all had flaws, but God honored them because of their relationship, because of His love for each other. And how will everyone know that we are His? That we belong to Him? That we belong to God, that we belong to Jesus? How will we know? Well, because of our love for each other. So I want you to think about all that while I read today's scripture. James 4, 1 through 10. You can follow along on the screen. It says, "What is causing the quarrels and fights among you? Don't they come from the evil desire at war within you? You want what you don't have, so you scheme and you kill to get it. You are jealous of what others have, but you can't get it. So you fight and you wage war to take it away from them. Yet you don't have what you want because you don't ask God for it. And you don't get it because your motives are all wrong. You only want what will give you pleasure, you adulterers. Don't you realize that the friendship with the world makes you an enemy of God? I say it again, if you want to be a friend of the world, you make yourself an enemy of God. Do you think the scriptures have no meaning? They say that God is passionate, that the spirit he has placed within us should be faithful to him, and he gives grace generously. As the scriptures say, God oppresses the proud but gives grace to the humble. So humble yourself before God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Come close to God, and God will come close to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. purify your hearts, for your loyalty is divided between God and the world. Let there be tears for what you have done. Let there be sorrow and deep grief. Let there be sadness instead of laughter, and gloom instead of joy. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and He will lift you up in honor. So James here is talking about the three enemies that we must face. The three enemies we must face. And the first one of those is the flesh. The flesh. So war, what is it good for? Fighting is a sign of sin in our lives. Most fighting is rooted in selfishness, pride, and lust. Does that mean there is never a time when we should get involved? Of course that's not the case. World War II, great example, right? Here you have people, Germany, that is systematically trying to wipe an entire race of people off the face of the earth. And we stepped in. Was that just? Absolutely, that was just. Absolutely. So I'm not saying that there is never, ever a case for war, but what the Bible says is that war comes because of fighting between the two of you. Now there is a... Well, there's some stupid wars. Let's just say this. There are some stupid wars that were caused because of stupid, stupid reasons. The first one of those, I just got two examples. The first one is the war called the War of the Golden Stool. All right? This is a crazy war. All right, so there's this stool. Now imagine that stool was all gold, right? And so what happened was the British governor of the Gold Coast, Sir Frederick Hodgson, demanded to sit on this stool of the Ashanti people. Now, this stool, like I said, it was gold, right? This stool was a gold stool that the Ashanti people made because that was where they said it honored their dead. And so their dead, what they said was their dead would come and they would sit a while and watch over what was going on with the Ashanti people. So this was not only a gold precious stool, it was a sacred stool, right? It was like the most honorable thing that they had. And so this British governor says, hey, I want to sit on that stool because I am a British governor and I'm important. And the Ashanti people were like, nope. This is our sacred, honorable stool. Now, I know we kind of sit there and go, well, that's kind of crazy. But I mean, we just think of all the sacred things that we have in Christianity and somebody would just to try to just kind of belittle it and use it for something really common, we would say, no, 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 no. You know, you can't do that. So, but this guy, this Sir Frederick, he demands to sit on the stool. The Ashanti people say no. And then for months and months, the Ashanti people and the British army fought. The Ashantis lost over 2,000 people. The Brits lost over 1,000 people. All for a stupid stool, right? That's a dumb reason to have a war. Well, there's an even dumber one, I think. In 1925, there's a war called the War of the Stray Dog. And it's exactly what you think that war would be. 20,000 Greeks met 10,000 Bulgarians on the battlefield over this. A Greek soldier, now that's not the dog, but it's a cute dog, and I thought maybe it was this dog that would cause someone to do what this man did. But this Greek soldier had a dog, had a puppy, and the puppy ran away from him. So the Greek soldier is chasing him, and he doesn't realize that he is now crossing over into the Bulgarian side of this war, of the Bulgarian side of the country. So he runs after this dog. The dog is running. The guy crosses into Bulgaria. A soldier sees him, shoots him dead, and war starts. 10,000 soldiers lost because of a little puppy dog. And neither of them could just say, hey, listen, I'm sorry, it was a dog and he got away and it was an accident, we messed up, we're sorry. But no, instead they go and they just fight this war for no reason. It's a dumb reason. It's a dumb war. But listen, don't they come from the evil desires at war within you? You want what you don't have, so you scheme and you kill to get it. Listen, the first enemy we must face is our own flesh. And what is flesh? What does that mean? Our flesh is our selfish desires, our jealousy, our schemes to get more in this world, more money, more power, more sex. Yet Jesus has said that if you want to be my follower, if you want to be my disciple, then you have to leave those things behind. You have to find a new way to live a life of selflessness and sacrifice, putting the needs of others before yourself, treating others the same way that you want to be treated. That's what love in action is. Lifting up the weak, the powerless, the meek. Now listen to me here. The flesh is strong. It is. Our desires, our wants for more and more and more, is strong. And the flesh is constantly at war with you and I. Yet we can defeat it. It can be done. There is a better way forward. There is a better way forward. You can defeat your flesh. You can defeat your desires. You can defeat your selfishness. And I think you know how I'm going to say to do that. But we're not there yet. The second enemy we must face is the world. Hebrews 12:14 says, work at living with peace with everyone. And work at living a holy life, for those who are not holy will not see the Lord. So the first part of this verse is quoted a lot. And listen, there's nothing wrong with quoting it, right? Work at living in peace with everyone. That is a great thing to practice. That is a great thing to strive for. Jesus has asked us to live at peace with the world. You want some examples? Well, Jesus said this. He says, if somebody strikes you on one cheek, right, what do? You offer him the other cheek. It says here, go for it. Right? That's what Jesus said. How about this? He said, listen, if you are asked by a soldier to carry his armor for 1 mile. Now you got to remember, soldiers were the enemy. Rome had come in, they had conquered, they had taken over this Jewish nation. They allowed the Jews to live there and to continue to practice their Jewish faith. However, they were clearly in charge. And it was written that any Roman soldier could ask someone to carry their gear for them for up to 1 mile. And if they did this, the Jewish people had to do it. And if they did that, well, the Jewish people did not like that very much. So what does Jesus say? He says, listen, if this happens, I want you to do this. I want you to not only go 1 mile with that soldier, but I want you to go 2. That was revolutionary. They hated that. They hated the fact that that could happen. They hated the fact that they would have to do that. But Jesus is saying, you go the extra mile. You do more than what is required. You do more than what is necessary. I mean, goodness, when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, you guys remember this? Peter draws a sword, cuts a soldier's ear off, is like, no, you're not taking my Jesus. And Jesus is like, stop. And he picks his ear up and puts it on this man's head and reattaches the ear. If I was Jesus, I might put it on a little crooked. But, you know, he probably didn't do that because he was Jesus, right? But, I mean, that's who we're talking about here. But let's make sure that we read the second part of that verse as well. Work at living a holy life. Holy literally means set apart. If we are not working at being different, at being loving and kind and gentle and honest and forgiving, is there any difference between you and a non-believer? Has Jesus really changed your life? Are you really following him? Notice it says work. Work toward this. Work toward it. Are you going to do this perfectly? Of course not. But I am always to be working toward living a holy life. John 17, 18 to 21. Just as you sent me into this world, I am sending them into the world. And I give myself as a holy sacrifice for them so they can be made holy by your truth. I'm praying not only for these disciples, but also for all who will ever believe in me through their message. I pray that they will all be one, just as you and I are one, as you are in me, Father, and I am in you, and may they be in us so that the world will believe that you sent me. So how do we face the world? Much like everything else in the world today, it seems as if Christians usually have one of two extremes, right? We surround ourselves with a bubble, and we listen to Christian music, and we watch Christian media, and we talk to Christian people, and we go to church, and we do Christian things, and Christian, which is okay. But what you have effectively done for yourself is you have isolated yourself from the rest of the world. Or the other extreme over here is that we say, well, Jesus told us to love everybody. And I need to go into the world and I need to win people to Jesus. So I am going to go do that, and there is going to be nothing in my life that is different than anybody else. Always have two extremes, right? That's not the right step either, because Jesus is calling us to be holy, to be set apart, to be a light, to shine brightly for the kingdom of God. That is what he is asking for. And we engage in the world. We live in the world. We love this world because the world is made up of our friends and our neighbors, and we love them and we want them to have the truth and the grace and the passion for Jesus that we have. And so we engage with these people. We love these people. But we also show and point toward a better way. See, we don't just isolate ourselves or just do everything else the world does. We need to do everything that we can to share Jesus with the world that so desperately needs him. Jesus says that if we are in him, that we shouldn't be surprised when the world hates us. The world hated him, and since we are supposed to be little Jesuses, that we should expect the world to hate us too. And when the world hates us, We are called to fight back the way that Jesus did. With love, with compassion, with mercy, and with grace. Why? Because it was more important to Jesus that the world come to a relationship with God, that the world would see God as a loving Father, that their sins would be forgiven, and that their lives would be changed, then for Him to get even. If that is the attitude of Jesus, who did no wrong, that Jesus who is God, well then what should we do? Jesus lived fully in the world, yet the world never stained Him. Our mission is to live like Jesus, to fully live in the world and yet not be stained. You know, there's an old phrase, right? I want to be in the world, but not of the world, right? And that phrase had some very, very good sentiment to it. It did. It was what this idea is. You know, we want to live in the world and we want to engage fully in the world, but yet not be stained by it. But what we have done with that is we have said, so I want to be in the world but not of the world, so therefore I'm going to totally remove myself from the world and just live in a Christian bubble. That's not what Jesus ever, ever called us to do. Ever. Number three. The enemy we must face is the devil. Verse 7 tells us to resist the devil. The devil is the last enemy here. Satan, Lucifer, however you want to call him, whatever you want to name him, that's the last enemy. And you guys know about this guy, right? I mean, he was an angel, right? He was in heaven with God, praising God, loving God. And then he decided that he wanted more. And he thought he could be God. And God rightly cast him down. Him and a third of the angels along with him. And there was a great war and a great battle. And God gave the devil. It's so funny. We talk about the devil like this. Ooh, you know, like. But, I mean, God cast the devil down and said, you can rule this place for a while, but when it's all over, it's over. And you are going to be punished forever. First Peter 5:8. Stay alert. Watch out for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. There's a book by a big game hunter named Peter Capstick. And he was a big game hunter in Africa. And he hunted lions and all those big game things. And he, this is a long time ago, in the 60s and 70s. He wrote a book called Death in the Long Grass. And in it, he talks about how there was a certain group of lions that had a taste for human blood. And they would come into camps at night. They would step over some people without even waking them up. And then they would find their intended prey. It was never determined how or why the lions chose whom they chose. But they would pick up their victims, kill them, and drag them away without waking a single person. Talk about scary. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go and stay at a hotel and maybe go home, right? Lions are serious business. The devil is serious business. But he pales and quakes at the name of Jesus. There's a reason why the Apostle Peter likens the devil to that of a lion. The devil can take any of us out very quickly. All he has to do is getting us focusing on the wrong thing. You remember the story of Peter, right? Jesus, well, the disciples are all in the boat, and there's a storm brewing, and things are crazy. It's the middle of the night, and then they look out, and there is a man or something walking along the water. And Peter's like, a ghost! I mean, rightly so. You don't see somebody walking on the water every day. And as he gets closer, it's Jesus. He's walking on the water. And Peter, we always make fun of Peter for this because the story, but notice that Peter was the only one that got out of the boat, okay? Peter says, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you and I'll come walking on the water with you. And Jesus is like, come on, man. And so Jesus and Peter, they're walking, they're talking, they're like, yes, this is awesome. And so Peter's walking, and Jesus is standing there, like, smiling, and like, you're doing great, Peter. You know, it's like me and Evelyn when Evelyn was trying to ride a bike, right? And, come on, you're doing great. And Peter's like, happy. And then he takes his eyes off of Jesus. And he starts looking at the waves, and he starts looking at the darkness, and he starts looking at the water, and he starts thinking, this is kind of crazy. I can see like fish. And what happens? You guys know. He sinks. He took his eyes off of Jesus, and he sunk. Listen. If we take our eyes off of Jesus, the devil is real. And he will devour you in a second. He hates us. He is going to spend eternity in punishment. So like a spoiled, spiteful child, he wants to drag everyone he can with him. However, notice what verse 7 says here. Resist the devil, and he will flee. Resist the devil, and he will flee. So how do we resist? How do we fight? It's one point. We surrender. I know, that's not a great battle plan, right? It's not. Surrendering is not a great way to win. Unless is Jesus and his kingdom and his way of doing things. Because that is what God is asking for each one of us. Surrender to him. When we surrender, he fights for us. Look at Exodus 14, 13 to 14. But Moses told the people, don't be afraid. Just stand still and watch the Lord rescue you today. The Egyptians you see today will never be seen again. The Lord himself will fight for you. Just stay calm. You guys remember what that story is, what that verse is about? The Egyptian army, you guys know, like, Pharaoh, he's like, let my people go, and Pharaoh's like, no, and like, okay, well, I'm going to send frogs, I'm going to send crickets, you know, I'm going to send all these things that are going to be a plague for you. And finally, the last plague was the death of everybody's firstborn, and that's where we get Passover, and then the blood on the door, and finally, Pharaoh's like, get out of here, I can't stand this anymore. And so, the whole people of Israel get up and flee, and they all get to the Red Sea, and then Pharaoh changes his mind. And so he sends his army after them, and the people are freaking out. And Moses is like, child, please. Watch what God does. And he raises his staff. You guys know this story. And the entire people of Israel walk through on dry ground of the Red Sea. And then they all get across. Moses lowers his staff. Everybody is wiped clean. Everybody in Pharaoh's army is gone. God will fight for you. He will. What do you have to do? You have to surrender. You have to trust. 2 Corinthians 3:18. So all of us, had that veil removed, can see and reflect the glory of the Lord. And the Lord, who is the Spirit, makes us more and more like Him as we are changed into His glorious image. Our job is to surrender to Him, to live in the Spirit, to ask the Spirit to remove our veils, to reflect the glory of the Lord. 7 through 10. So humble yourselves before God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Come close to God, and God will come close to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, for your loyalty is divided between God and the world. Let there be tears for what you have done. Let there be sorrow and deep grief. Let there be sadness instead of laughter and gloom instead of joy. Listen, humble yourselves before the Lord, and He will lift you up in honor. Humble yourself. Come close to God, and He will come close to us. Live differently. Grieve your sin. Take a moment to ask forgiveness. Take a moment to feel remorse when we wrong others, when we wrong our Creator. All of that is surrender. And when we surrender, when we do that, He will lift you up, He will fight for you, and He will honor you. He will make us more like Him as we are changed into His glorious image. Surrender. Surrender.